The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but
we
because
have main engine start. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston, broadcasting to 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good morning. I guess it's good afternoon, even here in California. Welcome, everybody, to the Sunday Space Show program. I am your host, David Livingston. It's great to be here live, and actually, I get to mean that in many ways, meaning like really live, but also live broadcasting. We have a great show for you today, and I'm glad you've all tuned in, and we have two guests who I will introduce in just a few minutes, but first, couple of announcements about the Space Show. Those of you who would like to give us a call and talk to our guest, the toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. Remember, no call screeners, and just be patient and wait, and we'll bring you up on the line as quickly as possible. And if there's a lot of people that want to use the line and I need to move you on because I'm giving you extended time on the line, don't be insulted. We only have the one toll-free line. Or if I send you an email and says you need to wrap it up, I've got people waiting, that's why. So go ahead and wrap it up. And listeners, we do just have the one toll-free line, so if you think you've waited too long to get in because it's busy and we have a busy day, for example, don't hesitate to email me and tell me you're waiting for the use of the toll-free line. You can also use email. It's not nearly as informative or as much fun for an active space show program, but it is available, and that is Dr. Space, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. And then we are copyrighted and registered, and all of you know that already. There are just a couple of few rules about doing that. So one is don't do anything commercial with any of our programs. Number two, please don't edit them or cut clips from them or anything like that and put them up on other websites, including your own website, and certainly not on YouTube. And then written transcripts are not permitted, even if they're for your own personal use. And there is a full copyright statement explaining our policy on the bottom of every spaceshow.com and onegiantleapfoundation.org webpage. I urge you to read what our copyright policy is, and if you do feel you have a compelling need to edit, clip, use, upload a Space Show comment or two, just email me and ask me and tell me what it is you want to do, and let's see if we can work it out. It's always better to ask than to just do something and then find you got a boatload of trouble on your hands for doing it. But I'm easily available, Dr. Space at thespaceshow.com. And we do podcasts through gigadial.net. You can find our RSS URL if you want to subscribe on our website, both our email newsletter and our website newsletter. And if you have any questions about that, please don't hesitate to send me an email. We're also in iTunes and a host of other places on the web, so you can easily find and subscribe to our podcast if you would like to do that, and we certainly welcome and hope that you do that. Our website is thespaceshow.com, so we do have a full detailed newsletter that goes up on our website after the Sunday program. It has all of the information of the upcoming week's program, all of the guest bios, and it's the only place where we have a future events section as to what's in store for everyone coming up on the Space Show. Then if we modify our schedule during the week, and that does happen from time to time for a variety of reasons, we put those changes on the website newsletter. So if you tune in and you think you're going to hear Joe Blow and you hear Mary Rainstorm, then just check the website newsletter and you'll probably see what happened and when you will be able to hear Joe Blow instead of Mary Rainstorm. And all of that is kept current on the website newsletter. Everything we do is archived, and so you can listen live. You can easily download our programs. It takes maybe 90 seconds if you have a high-speed internet connection. And you can listen right off of our website or our blog, thespaceshow.wordpress.com. And if you also use the blog, you can post comments for other listeners, and often the guest will engage you in comments as well. There is a store on our website up near the top. It's called Space Show Gear. Please check it out. And then there is the guest search tool. So remember, that is right now the only way to search our database. So if you click on guest search, you will go to a chronological listing of all of the Space Show programs since the beginning of time. And you can do a global keyword search like space tourism or Mars or Phobos or SLS or something like that. You will get all of the shows where that term provided at least a decent part of the discussion topics. And you have to write down those dates. Then you go back to the Space Show's homepage, go all the way to the bottom of it, and you can plug those dates in on the Space Show search engine, and you can pull up all of those shows by date. I know that's a very cumbersome method, and that will all be changed with the launching of our new website, which is coming up now, probably no later than the middle of November, but we're hoping to have it ready sooner. A lot of this is based on me and my post-surgery recovery, so I take responsibility for that, but hoping we'll make it before the middle of November, but certainly, as it looks like now, no later than the middle of November. And then we'll actually have a decent searchable archive database, and you won't have to do anything like I just described. And right now, for sponsors, Secure World is a partial sponsor for us, and they do work to promote cooperative solutions for space security, and you can get a lot more information on their own website, so visit www.swfound.org for Secure World Foundation. They also are the partial sponsors of our webinar series, and our other current sponsor is our broadcast engineer and website crisis management expert person, Tom Driggers, who's been with us all but the first 6 or 7 months of the Space Show's history. And he has really kept us on the air more than any other person I know. He has kept our website going when it should have died a million years ago, and our equipment going, and he does his best work, you know, on the 11th, 12th, and 13th hour of crisis. And if you need really high-quality engineering services of any kind, Tom is your guy, and you can reach him through our sponsor pages on both thespaceshow.com as well as onegiantleapfoundation.org's website. So let's talk about today. So we have two guests coming to you today. Let me just tell you briefly a little about each one. And their bios are up on the website and will be when we archive the Space Show program. So I don't want to spend a lot of time reading about them. I want to be sure we talk about what they're doing. That's far more important. Jay Whitner is with us, and he is the CEO and serves as the president of Kickstarter Coaching and is a founding partner of the Space Finance Group and Integrated Space Analytics. He's also been a member of the National Space Society and other space advocacy groups since 1986. He served 3 terms on the NSS Board of Directors, during which he was the VP of Membership and a member of the Executive Committee. His financial support of the National Space Society was recognized by a permanent appointment to the Buzz Aldrin Council. He graduated from Emory University Business School with a degree in finance, and he has worked and consulted in numerous industries, including many related to space, including crowdfunding and direct space investments. And Ron Jones is our other guest, and I personally met Ron years and years ago through our mutual friend who we recently lost and I've paid tribute to on the air, Declan O'Donnell, as Ron was an early participant in United Societies of Space and Declan's program. He is a partner and in the Space Systems Lead in Integrated Space Analytics, ISA, and this was recently created to update and automate the Integrated Space Plan, which I saw and knew back when I knew Ron in the early days of having met him and going to Colorado to attend Declan's meeting. He is also the marketing director of Biospace Experiments Incorporated, which provides low-cost turnkey access to space for microgravity researchers. For his day job, he works for Boeing as their product lifecycle management legacy engineering officer lead, which of course is a mouthful, and he has the responsibility for all engineering data from all of Boeing's former and inactive programs. His history goes back even further, so his bio is on the website so you can read about him, but I would much rather talk to Jay and to Ron. So, Jay and Ron, welcome to the Space Show. How are you both today?
Doing great, David. Thanks for having us.
And that was Jay talking, right?
Yes.
And Ron, what do you
Ron's
sound
here.
Like?
Ron's here. Hear you 5x5.
Ron, can you kind of give us some sort of a concise history of the space plan? You know, I mentioned that I saw it years and years ago when I first met you in those early days of Declan's work on space systems and societies and things like that. So it has a good history behind it. Can you tell us what we're talking about and give us that overview?
Sure. The Integrated Space Plan was something I created back in the late 80s. It actually started, I actually started thinking about those kind of things, putting together a long-range, the elements of the vision, years earlier. I'd been a space cadet growing up through the 70s and 80s, and when I got my first real space job on the space shuttle, working at Vandenberg Air Force Base, working on the Air Force Space Shuttle, I was in my late 20s. I got there and found that all the young, kids my age really didn't have any idea how what we were doing there at Vandenberg fit into a bigger picture of the space program. It was neat to work on the space shuttle, and but they didn't really see any broader purpose. And I was kind of a child of Apollo. I grew up with Jerry O'Neill. I read Jerry O'Neill's early books on space colonies, and if you remember those, we'd been waiting for the space shuttle to come, that $300 a pound per orbit vehicle that would, open up space to us so we can build communities in space that would hold thousands and thousands of people. So I'd already had a pretty good idea being familiar with all that and the architecture required to build that, in my head. And then when I got to Vandenberg, actually working on the shuttle, of course, there were a whole new set of realities to deal with then. But the bottom line is after the Challenger explosion happened, everything came to an end at Vandenberg, and I'd met all these young kids there that didn't have any idea what the space program was really all about. So I found myself just thinking about it. How can you portray what we were doing there into a broader context? So that's when I started thinking about it. It's a long story exactly how I came up with the structure of the thing, which probably don't need to go into that now. Suffice to say, about a year later, I ended up at Rockwell working on the Endeavor, the replacement for the Challenger. And it was there that I had a chance to take some thoughts that I had over the previous year, start putting them down on paper. And so I was, drawing this thing out, and about that time the Macintosh computer came into being. And I got some instruction on that from an intern there at Rockwell. And, 30 minutes later, I was off drawing little boxes and lines and circles. And it took about 18 months to put together the Integrated Space Plan that people remember from the 1990s time frame. So what is the Integrated Space Plan? Basically, it was an attempt to capture you know, a systematic overview of the entire human-focused space effort. You know, I tried to pull everything together that I was being exposed, that I had been exposed to, and that I saw actually in the industry, all the programs, the missions, the goals, the emerging technologies that required to kind of make it all happen. I tried to put them all together in a logical, rational way. I should probably say that at my time at Rockwell, I worked on the on Endeavor for quite a while, up through STS-26, return to flight, which was very exciting. I was in the test engineering group there. But during that period, first year or so, I was building the integrated space plan, and about that time I took what I had, and I showed a guy at Rockwell, who turned out to be the program manager of the Advanced Projects Group. And so shortly thereafter, I found myself working in the Advanced Projects Group at Rockwell, and there I was exposed to everything I wanted as far as all the old studies from Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, all the old contractor studies. They had stuff going back to Wernher von Braun. I mean, it was just file cabinets full of valuable, you know, old studies. It was just, I was like a kid in a candy shop. So I, of course, spent a lot of time looking through that kind of stuff. So, and also at the time, remember, we had the National Commission on Space. There were a number of, contemporary space works, in work. And the Sally Ride Report, a lot of people remember that. Anyway, all those scenarios from those kind of reports, I tried to integrate in a logical way into the plan, right? So, and chronologically position them in ways that made sense. But it's really not a plan, because when you add all these different elements together, there's lots of ways to get to, like, the centerline milestones, which were, you know, space station, moon base, Mars base, and beyond, building, space communities ultimately 100 years into the future. There's no one route to get there. There's lots of different routes to the plan to get there, depending on what you really want to do. So there's many paths to a goal. So calling it a plan maybe isn't really accurate. But but the scope of the thing, all the elements, pictured in kind of a broad scheme, gave a context to all the programs we were working on, especially in the time frame, back in the 80s. It put everything into context to allow you to evaluate them in a little different light. So it became a tool, basically, to educate people on the space program and the nuances of why one program may be more important than another. So that's kind of the background of the Integrated Space Plan, how it came about. Now, Rockwell adopted it. They really liked it. I spent a big chunk of time kind of selling it within the organization, because Rockwell, even back then, was kind of a dinosaur aerospace company. I hate to think about it that way. So it took a bit of a sales job to get them to go for it. But when they finally realized kind of the significance of it, they put their logo on it and adopted it as a marketing tool, printed up thousands of them, and the rest is history. They were all over the NASA and universities, and so it was. I think it was one of the kind of the neater things to come out of the initial President Bush space exploration initiative.
Did it get implemented as a policy roadmap? Like right now, NASA came out recently with its roadmap to Mars for 2032 or something like that, which I guess is as close to policy as we're going to see. Did this get implemented in any way as a NASA or congressionally mandated or space policy?
Well, no, I can't say that it was. Although at the time, hundreds of them. I got a letter from Congressman Brown. I got contacted by his office, and who at the time was head of the Space Caucus within Congress. And we ended up sending like 200 or 300 of them to Congress. And so, they did have it. They did look at it. The National Space Society, way back then, Lori Garver was heading up the National Space Society back then, and she was an early supporter. She spent a lot of time on the Hill with it, and in the later years, when I got to Washington, I was working for Buzz Aldrin. We spent a lot of time working on the Hill, you know, showing it. And in fact, we actually briefed it to Congress in '97, the last time I revised it, during a hearing on the future of NASA. So, you know, a lot of folks were exposed to it and the thinking in it. You know, how that affected, you know, future policy, you know, it didn't affect it enough, you know.
So,
we didn't get it. We haven't gone anywhere fast, but certainly people within, you know, I was talking to a guy last night at a party. You know, I've been at this conference in Austin, and a NASA guy from headquarters. He said, "Hey, man, the guy sitting next to me has got one on his wall. He's a big, you know, supporter." And so, I mean, they're still there right now. And, so I'd like to think we're influencing at some level, but there's a lot of other factors that go into policy.
So if listeners, if you want to sort of visually see what we're talking about, if you go to thespaceplan, that's all one word, .com, so it's on your homepage, right?
They can see it, access it through the website. Yeah, they'll see it.
So there's something that looks like a bunch of colored bars. It's really tiny on my laptop, but that's it. If you expand it, then you'll see what we're talking about. It'll say view the 2015 integrated space plan. So you want to click on that and enlarge it. And Ron, how does the 2015 version differ than the 1990 version?
Well, it's a lot sexier looking. You know, the early version was pretty much kind of an engineering geek view of things, and you know, it's pretty black and white. You know, we got really kind of risque. One of the versions had a red border around it. That's about as much color was on it. The current version, though, looks really pretty. We've integrated colors into it, so you can see the Mars-related stuff is red, the moon-related stuff is beige, the orbital-related stuff is like light blue. So you can get a sense, you know, what the elements are, you know, or where they are by the colors. The bubbles aren't quite... Now, the bubbles on the original plan were meant to show these great plateaus of human achievement that are kind of in the background of the current plan, and you got to kind of, you know, they're not quite as obvious, but they're there. We had a graphics organization, or one of our sponsors had some graphics capability, and he donated some of their graphics people to help us out, and so they made it look pretty in ways that maybe we engineering types couldn't quite see. Maybe, Jay, you might want to talk a bit about it.
This is like a super-duper organizational chart, right?
Well, in one sense, David, it's a long-term flow chart, a roadmap to our future in space, covering roughly the next 100 years of what we think is going to happen in the future to build the space that all of us want to listen to the space show, you know, dream about. And where we came into this whole thing was that the integrated space plan had been dormant for a long time, and we were talking about the Space Finance Group is an affiliated company, and we had just done a crowdfunding campaign for the National Space Society and had finished that, and we're looking at what we might want to do next. And we had, I had talked to the guys about Ron's integrated space plan from so long ago, and maybe that would be a good thing to do a crowdfunding campaign for. And one of my partners, Stephen Jorgensen, said, you know, maybe we should form a partnership with Ron to do this, to do it together. And that way, instead of one person pushing it, you know, there'd be a team of people pushing it, and that we'd be able to do more with it. So we did our Kickstarter last year in July, and it was a successful run. We had 400 and something backers from 20 something countries that supported the campaign, and that gave us, you know, a little bit of capital to stand up the company, build the website, do the research, print the copies of the poster, and distribute them. And while there's a lot of details that maybe we'll have time to get into during the show, I think the biggest detail is that for the beauty of the integrated space plan that Ron worked on with a bunch of contributors long ago, it was never on the web. Because at that time, there wasn't the web that we know today. So just the fact that anybody in the world can go to the spaceplan.com and see it is fundamentally different. And there's a lot of details and different features that we can talk about in terms of what color gave us. And Ron mentioned that we'd gotten some help. And I just want to give a shout-out to 212 Box of New York. It's the design firm that gave us a tremendous amount of help, especially Eric Clough and Monica Tall. And also, while I'm thinking about it, our two other partners that aren't on the show today, because it's just too many people to have four guests, but I already mentioned Stephen Jorgensen, who is our CFO. And I also want to mention Gary Bickford, who is our IT wizard that's helped us make our website and is bringing the integrated space plan to the world through the World Wide Web.
I'll do it this way because I've got two questions for you, and they're both going around the same line, so I'm only going to ask you one of them. So this is from Bob, and Bob is in Las Cruces, New Mexico. And he says, I'm looking at it on your website that David gave out a few minutes ago, and I'm trying to understand quickly what the integrated space plan is. So is this a way to engage human spaceflight, for example, to settle Mars or just to visit Mars or to establish cislunar space or return to the moon? I'm looking at it quickly, and I can't get that from looking at it quickly. Obviously, it's going to take a little bit more effort on my part to understand it. But can you, tell us what the space plan really does from step one to step infinity?
Well, and I'm sure Ron will want to talk about this also, but what the ISP really does is it shows the infrastructure elements needed for humanity to harvest the wealth of the solar system. That if we do what's shown in the plan, we'll be able to send robotic probes anywhere in the inner system that we want. We'll be able to send cargo anywhere in the inner solar system, send people anywhere in the inner solar system. And we'll also learn to live off the land through ISRU and 3D printing and closed-loop life support, those kind of technologies, that this gives us all the destinations if we'll implement what the plan shows.
Is the plan, does it have a starting point or a preference point, or does it assume going to the moon or returning to the moon is equal to going to Phobos and Deimos or Mars? Because I'm thinking of the crowds that say we got to go to the moon first. You know, that's the only logical way to do space settlement and get to Mars. And other people say you don't need to go to the moon. We can go directly to Mars. And you guys know the arguments as well as I do, and so do the listeners. I don't have to repeat them. So does the plan give you a hierarchy, or does it treat everything as being equal, or is there a starting point and an ending point?
Okay, well,
the plan,
like I said, this isn't really a plan per se. It's a compilation of all those scenarios that you just talked about. The scenarios that go Mars direct, or the scenarios that go to the moon, use the moon as a stepping stone to Mars. All those things are on the integrated space plan. Because right now, we don't know what's really going to happen. But what we can do, when you look at all the studies that have been done, the logical focuses of our activity are low Earth orbit, L1, the Lagrange points, the moon, Mars, Phobos, Mars base, beyond. That's kind of a logical flow of outward bound of the nodes that we're likely to expand to. But the real purpose of the ISP is not really to capture that. And then, by the way, I just kind of went down the center line. And if you continue on further on the new ISP, we eventually get into building habitats in free space, O'Neill-type colonies and beyond. And way down at the bottom, we even get into terraforming, Mars, I think. But, really, when you look at the real purpose, the real goals of the ISP are the circles, what we really want to do, like Jay mentioned, is we want to tap into the resources of near-Earth space, the asteroid and the energy wealth. We want to expand human presence in the solar system. We want to, an early significant thing is becoming a biplanetary civilization. Those are kind of the broad goals outlined in those bubbles that you can only achieve by doing many of the boxes, not necessarily all of them, but just the key ones. And obviously, if you're going to become a biplanetary civilization, you have to have an outpost on the moon or maybe Mars or both. But, this is not telling us any one way to do things, but it's telling us if we do the right things, we'll be able to attain routine access to space, command the resources of space, and eventually, proliferate, human communities throughout the solar system. But there's no one path to get there. There's many paths on the integrated space.
But it does tell you the correct way to do this, which is to follow one of the paths on the integrated space plan.
There's a very logical path. If you create the infrastructure to go to the moon and then go to Mars, you're going to have, and if you build your infrastructure right, the suggestion or the assumption in the integrated space plan is that the infrastructure we build is kind of utilitarian. We want to be able to use it maybe not only on the moon, but maybe on Mars. Not only on the moon, but maybe an asteroid. And there are some assumptions, we got to do it smart. That's the whole thing. We got to do it smart, I'm not really sure how else to put that.
So, if somebody does NASA endorse this? Does it adopt it? What do you hear officially from NASA? Or let me try it this way. Do they try to put programs that they want to do or are doing? I'm just going to blow programs out off the top of my head like Europa or Mars 2020 or their roadmap to Mars for human spaceflight or something like that. Do they try to fit it into one of the pathways on the integrated space plan?
We have fit those things into their proper place on the integrated space plan. Especially the things that we know that are funded and that make sense for human expansion into space, they're on the integrated space plan. We can't say NASA hasn't come out and endorsed this yet, but there's a lot of people in NASA that love the plan. I talked to one last night. The big factors, and there's a lot of stuff on the plan that NASA does not endorse, or it's not in their purview to really get behind, like commercial activities. One of the things we want to do that we probably want to touch upon, and one of the uses for this new generation plan, will be to help identify niches for future private enterprise to get involved in space development. There's a number of stuff on the plan, on the old plan and on the current plan, that things that need to be developed if we're going to commercialize space and do all the things we want to do, have tourism in orbit and on the moon and a lot of that stuff. NASA hasn't gone out and said, "Oh, we got to do that," but yet we know we have to do it if we want to develop space the way we space geeks want to do it.
Well, one special advantage I think that we have, David, with the Integrated Space Plan is that we are not political. So we're not bound by any political considerations about what the current administration is for or against. Well, we're not part of an individual aerospace company, that we have like a certain product or a certain vehicle that we're trying to advocate for because, you know, we're affiliated in that way. So we're independent. And I think that's a great strength of the plan because we can be impartial in terms of what we think makes sense for the future without trying to fit it into any political agenda. And I think that's a special advantage that we have.
Bill is in Seattle. Another email for you. And he says, to many of us, to do anything beyond LEO requires advanced propulsion over the chemical rockets that we're using today. I'm not specifically talking about science missions, but mostly human missions. So, for example, on your plan, how would advanced propulsion or nuclear propulsion or probably something even more advanced show up or be recommended or be reflected?
Well, there are various forms of advanced propulsion shown on the plan, and I invite Bill to go ahead and look at the spaceplan.com when he has a chance to see some of the different plans or options there. There's nuclear thermal, there's ion drive, there's different futuristic propulsion shown on the plan. And there's even a column that's basically focused on propulsion systems and interplanetary expansion. So there's, I would guess, like at least a half a dozen different possible future advanced propulsion techniques or technologies that will really address a lot of the human factors once they're available.
You have a caller, so let's see who's with us. Good afternoon, caller. Welcome to the Space Show. Who are you and where are you, please? Hello, caller. Are you there? Caller, are you there, or did we lose you already?
Hello.
Yes, are you the caller?
This is John in Fremont, California.
Hi, John. Welcome back to the show. What's on your
Thank
mind
you.
Today?
Yeah, this looks like a really comprehensive plan. One thing that was crossing my mind was the Shackleton Energy's plans. And when they were on the show, they talked about a consortium between, their suppliers and governments to coordinate these activities. So just before I called, I heard you're not getting into politics or anything like that. But have you integrated some of Shackleton's plans into this?
Well, I guess the core of Shackleton is mining for lunar ice,
mm-hmm.
and that is a key feature in many different space architectures, whether you talk to Paul Spoudis or many different people talk about the value and importance of lunar ice. That's clearly part of our plan, and it's mentioned in various different places from pilot programs to larger scale ice mining. Now, I know Shackleton does more than just the ice, but that sort of is their focus.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, and they, of course, think that their way is the only way. I mean, he said that multiple times. This is the only way to commercialize and develop space. But, you know, it's a many, many multi-billions, if not hundreds of billions of dollars plan with sovereign funds. But the ultimate goal is to replace fossil fuel with space solar power, which is developed through three different phases, starting with lunar ice development. As I said, this is the plan. You know, everybody has the plan, of course. I think that this would be, I think if you put it up next to this, I think that what the Integrated Space Plan is showing is that there's not just one chosen way to try to do something with an end result that is very political, meaning let's get rid of fossil fuels because the ocean is rising and you're going underwater quickly. And, you know, he quoted a rate of temperature rise, which is not supported scientifically by many climate scientists. I don't want to get into a climate science argument. That's the last thing I want to do on the space show today. But a lot of what was said was very controversial to people within the industry. And I don't think the Integrated Space Plan goes off in that direction and attempts to say, this is it, guys. You want to do commercial space, you got to sign on board. This is all we can do. This is it. And you got to get rid of fossil fuels down the road, which eventually means all these hundreds of millions of dollars for space solar power. And that's how we're going to get there. And then we'll have a bigger launch industry, and then we'll have this, and we'll have this, and everything flows from that. So I don't think the Integrated Space Plan is specific to one approach as being the chosen approach. And I think it would include the Shackleton approach in the broad sense of the picture. I don't see that you're passing judgment on anything. So you wouldn't say, I think Shackleton is trying to raise way too much money, or I don't, you know, some of their specs are maybe a little on the skeptical side, or maybe space solar power is not the answer. I don't think you're attempting to pass judgment like that. You would just say this is a possible way to accomplish some of the goals that we all have in common.
And many of the attributes of the Integrated Space Plan are mentioned by several different leading space advocates, researchers, firms, and I think the lunar ice is a good example, that a lot of people are talking about the value of lunar ice because it makes a lot of sense. So that's clearly in the plan. But no, we're not really advocating for or against any specific plan, but the idea of lunar ice is a very general idea.
Well, and so is space solar power. So many organizations support the idea of space solar power in ways different than Shackleton supports it. But you're not saying nix on space solar power. That's just part of the pathway to what is possible, correct?
Yeah, I have another question. Sorry.
Can I address the issue?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you did. Absolutely.
You guys did an excellent job describing what was on the ISP. And, you know, the ISP is very pro, you know, space solar power. I mean, that was one of the main reasons for doing it, because I personally feel that what it's really all about is not necessarily going to the moon or Mars, but tapping into the unlimited energy and material wealth of the solar system.
I'm with you there.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Hold on. Let him finish. Yet. Let him finish.
I spent the last 2 days with the CEO of Shackleton, who just happens to be a big supporter of this project, and. So because he sees all his elements on there, like we said, there's nobody's name is attached to it, but these are the kind of things we want to do.
Now, you were with Bill Stone. Is that who you were with?
Jim Curbella.
Okay, Jim is the one who was on the show talking about his plan.
Yeah. Is he the CEO?
No,
I thought he was.
He's a COO something else.
Okay.
That's why I asked you if you talked to Bill Stone. I'd love to talk to Bill Stone sometime, but he's elusive for interviews, I guess. But Jim does a great job.
Just to touch on the space solar power before we leave that, is there's a half a dozen blocks on the Integrated Space Plan that are milestones in the space solar power development. So that's definitely a piece of the plan.
Yeah, but it may be a different approach to space solar power than what Jim has for Shackleton. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Number of approaches, and
right.
And this doesn't specify any specific approach.
Right.
So I saw a critical path column, and then I saw I don't have it in front of me because I'm on my cell phone, but it was like R&D. Research that needs to be done. Is there any sort of prioritization? So on the critical path, I didn't see a gravity prescription, gravity research and artificial gravity and determining what levels of artificial gravity are necessary. And that's really a high priority.
Sure. Well,
where does that fit in?
That's a great question, because on the new version of the plan, well, when you get home or to your office or something, and you're not on your cell phone, if you look at the plan, you'll see there's 6 green elements. And what those are designated by the color is urgent, unfunded, or underfunded activities.
Perfect.
Now, almost 500 blocks, we only allowed 6 of them to be green. And one of those 6 things is a variable G biomedical facility.
Excellent. Okay.
Because in our view, it's very difficult to plan a lunar base, a Mars base, long-distance space travel without knowing the gravity prescription. And it's come up fairly often on the space show, I guess.
I'm trying to bring it up as often as I can.
So we recognize that. We're in 100% agreement. And other aspects of this are cryogenic propellant storage is one of the green boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Cryogenic refueling in microgravity environment is a green box. Rovers to explore the lunar poles. And an OTV, STV kind of a vehicle, a little bit like the Jupiter, is one of the green boxes.
Well, thank you. Great plan. Thanks very much, David.
Okay, John, thank you for the call-in.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Listeners, we're a little bit beyond halfway, so I'm going to go ahead and take a break. But you can call us. We do answer the phone during the break. And the toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. Email remains drspace, drspace, at thespaceshow.com. And everybody sit tight. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible.
The mission of the Space Show is to promote future economic opportunities, scientific discoveries, and medical advances for all humankind through peaceful and cooperative ventures in outer space. The Space Show intends to be the forum by which space exploration becomes an integral part of our culture, our economy, our country, our world, and our global vision, in which all nations unite in creating a thriving future through the enormous potentials afforded by off-Earth opportunities. The Space Show is committed to advancing integrity and responsibility, both in our off-Earth conduct and in the potential long-range consequences of our actions in space. The Space Show wants to make the dreams of space today the realities of tomorrow.
And welcome back, everybody. Part 2 of our Sunday Space Show program. We're talking about the Integrated Space Plan with Jay Whitner and Ron Jones. And you can go to www.thespaceplan.com and click on the small picture up sort of in the center of the page that looks like it has a bunch of colored bars. And then that is the Integrated Space Plan. And then you can start enlarging it once you get to that position. And that's what we're talking about today. And I have a couple of emails, so this is a shout-out message, I guess for both of you, but more focused to Ron. It says, a shout-out to Ron from the St. Louis Space Frontier. You have a great radio voice, great interview, Christine. And this is Christine Nobby, who's been a guest on the show before, and who I assume you know, Ron. So, you know,
Christine is our space leader in St. Louis.
Okay, well then obviously you know her. Terrific person, was herself a very good guest. And the next one is also an email from June in Portland, Oregon. And June says, how can one get a copy? You talked about charts or posters or something of the Integrated Space Plan. How can one get a copy of them?
Well, they can go to the website at thespaceplan.com.
Uh-huh.
They can order a poster. They can order it either in a mailing tube, which is my strong recommendation. That way there's no folds in it or anything. And we also have packages where they can order like more than one poster for a discount. So like if somebody has an NSS chapter or something that they want to get a few of them, they should sort of discuss it amongst themselves and maybe order five so they get a better price.
But if someone just wants one for themselves or a gift to someone or something, they can go find it on your website and order it in a mailing tube, and that is the best way to get it. It comes rolled up, and then it's easy to unroll and to display.
Yeah, that way it's suitable for framing right off the bat. There's no folds in it. We have a fulfillment company that ships them all out for us every day, so that's the very best way to get one.
What does it cost?
It costs $25 in a mailing tube. You can get it for $17 if you want it folded, but again, I don't really recommend it.
No, I have it, and I would not recommend getting it folded. You absolutely want it in a mailing tube if you're going to get it, because that way it gives you all of the options for display without any creases or anything else that are in it. You've been getting a lot of press about your new version of the Integrated Space Plan, so what I've seen has all been positive. Have there been any critiques of it, any hits of it, ignorant people, saying we don't belong in space, we should stay here on Earth and solve all our earthly problems? That's the kind of a common argument we hear all the time.
I haven't heard anything really negative about it. Ron, have you heard anything bad?
No, not a thing yet. But if I get any negative feedback, I'm going to send them to you, Jay.
Oh, thanks, Ron. I appreciate that.
So I know you have a Wired article that appeared a couple of months ago that I will put in the summary of the show, but you told me you also have a new article that just came out in Discovery Online, correct?
Yes, just happened yesterday. Excellent article, and we're kind of happy with it. We haven't really talked about it yet, Jay. You have seen it, I suppose.
Sure, I thought it was good. We also were in Fast Company. We were on the Register. We were in Leonard David's Inside Outer Space. We've been getting quite a bit of coverage.
Do you ever hear from anybody in Congress or a congressional staff member?
Well, it's kind of early days, really, to hear much of that. We started shipping the poster in July. We basically stood up the website, with all the data in like the July-August timeframe, early in October. So a lot of the word is still spreading, and we do anticipate, getting inquiries from I guess, staffers at Congress and aerospace companies. It takes a while to get the word out.
Well, and I don't think we've sent any to Congress, have we?
Nope.
Yeah, so it would help to maybe, we should think of that. We should look at maybe who we should send it to there, because there are a few committees that, might want to see it.
Or maybe to some interesting presidential candidates. Maybe some of them would actually care about space if they saw it.
Well, I had some email back and forth with Jim Muncy, and he said, and I'd have to look in my emails, but there's a place where you can get, like, the names of the space staffers for people. So that's probably where I would send it when we get around to that.
But I would think maybe to the candidates, maybe somebody would actually create a space policy once they see the Integrated Space Plan, and if they open their mouth about space, it might sound intelligent. So
maybe we should wait till they get down to fewer candidates.
Till you know who I was going to say, until you know who the candidates might be. But I would definitely not overlook the opportunity to bring something to the attention of the candidates. Roger is in Billings, Montana, and I don't know why they're not using the phone again today, but guys, come on. You're not at work. It's 1-866-687-7223. So Roger in Billings says, for advocates who understand this and who are supportive, how do they go about advocating it? what is the goal of the advocation? Is it to help the plan get implemented or just to be more known?
Well, we'd like the plan to propagate throughout the space community and beyond, because part of our objective is not to say that this 2015 version of the Integrated Space Plan is the be-all, end-all, every answer to everything forever. We want it to be a springboard to the community looking over the plan and saying, you know, I think you should add a block that says something like this. Or, why don't you consider doing it that way? So we want it to be a discussion forum that attracts people in the community so that we can build a consensus over where the community thinks we should go.
So
yeah, I agree absolutely with that. Or, you know, we spent so long in low Earth orbit. We're trying to break out. NASA's trying to make plans for going to the, you know, Moon and Mars. And by the way, looks like NASA, their main focus in the near term is going to be, a facility around the Moon to help other countries get to the Moon. I mean, that looks like where NASA's kind of what they're focused on right now, and then use that facility as a springboard to Mars. And if that's the way we do it, fine. But we want this to help refine the discussion. And we certainly want to solicit anybody if they want to give us some feedback. Anybody comes up with any ideas, things that we've missed. Although we've heard a lot of stuff on there now, certainly if we've missed anything, we certainly want to know.
Is it?
And we want a consensus. When we're on the internet, being on the internet, it gives us a chance for a global consensus. Something that NASA doesn't. They don't really. They're just trying to get a consensus within the government and having a hard time. But we're hoping we can help force a broader community consensus, which for us, one of our objectives.
Are you U.S.-centric in your perspective on the Integrated Space Plan, or do you attempt to be globalist in your views?
No, we've attempted to incorporate the best ideas from the European Space Agency, the Japanese Space Agency. There's some Russian stuff in there. We're trying to attack this as a global space program. We, the odds are, if we go to Mars or the Moon, we're probably going to do it in an international forum. So this is really a global effort.
So a globalist perspective is more accurate than just U.S. alone, then.
Sure, but we're also, we also want to get the private sector. That's another prime focus. We want to help define niches for the private sector because, let's face it, to do this, I think it's going to have to be a much broader group of people than even the 16 countries that built the International Space Station. I think the private sector is going to have to play a leading role.
Do you have you in the past, or do you have a plan to reach out to something like the Space Frontier Foundation and their annual conference this year? It's going to be in Seattle in June, for example, rather than in Silicon Valley. But that would seem to reach a lot of the private sector that is involved in the emerging commercial space industry.
Well, actually, the Space Frontier Foundation was one of our sponsors. They were a supporter of the plan. And we look forward to working with them in the future and the other space advocacy organizations as well, NSS and the other groups.
Right.
So through the organizations, you are reaching the private sector for sure.
Well, we'll probably do focused direct outreach to select companies. But again, with the website being primarily set up in July and August, there's been a lot of paper shuffling and IT things that we've been working on. We're a small team. There's a lot of work to do. But we think that what we're offering has great value, and I would expect that you and Ron have both experienced this. You know, I've got maybe 75 space books in my home library, but if you ever try to give one to some non-space person to read, it's like a really tough situation because they're looking at it and they're seeing it's a couple hundred pages and they don't know anything about it. The ISP has a power of being a one-page document that people can take a look at and sort of grasp. Even though it's very complicated, at least it's one page that you can get people to look at it. And I think that's a special power that the ISP has that I'm not aware of any other space educational tool really having.
You have another one that's from Carl, and he says, I'm an undergrad studying physics at the University of Arizona, and I intend to do my graduate work in cosmology or astrophysics or a related field, but probably at a different university. I'm wondering if you are reaching out into the various student communities across the country, SEDS, and other student organizations that have an interest in space. It would seem to me that you're made for order for reaching students, both undergrads as well as grads.
Ron, why don't you take that?
As a matter of fact, last week, Gary and I did a space talk with SEDS. We haven't really talked about what we're doing with the automated version of the ISP on the web yet. One of the things a key thing that we're doing is creating a database of information behind all the elements on the integrated space plan. If you go to the plan that's online right now, if you click on a box, it'll take you to most of the boxes will take you to a single descriptive site that kind of describes what the thing is. That we did as kind of a afterthought. The main focus of what we want to get done in the next year or two is to actually create an entire database with information behind all the about all the types of elements in the plan. This is going to be a massive undertaking. One of the big things that we need to get done is fill this database with content, and so. Obviously, we're looking for some young space activists that have some IT experience and understand the basics of what's going on in space, like SEDS, and we're going to be recruiting a bunch of those folks to help fill the content in on the database, and we've got about a dozen people been helping us so far. Fill it out, but we need to put together a little legion of folks to help build the thing the way it needs to be built up. So yeah, we're talking with SEDS right now, and if anyone else out there is interested in getting involved, do get a hold of us and we'll connect you up with our IT wizard, Gary Bickford, and he's the guy that's coordinating that content effort.
One thing I want to mention before I forget is if anybody listening to this wants to participate, whether it's helping us with research, doing some IT activities, some outreach activities, I want to give my email out on the air to anybody that wants to get involved. We think this is very important. But if anybody wants to get in touch with me, you can reach me at jay.whitner, WITTNER, at thespaceplan.com. We'd love to have you with us.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what you get by putting that out on the air, but hopefully most of it will be relevant. I've got a couple of bridges that I might be able to send you some deals on.
Okay.
We'll see what happens. Brad has an email. I'm toying with getting rid of email or getting rid of the toll-free line just to see what happens. But, okay, Brad is in Denver, Colorado. And Brad says, as a startup entrepreneur in a space company, is there any advantage for me to somehow do something with your integrated space plan that would help a young startup? Or do I continue following my business plan course for the startup, regardless of your integrated space plan? I'm trying to understand if there's a connect the dots here that can benefit me and my startup in a very specific way.
Well, we believe that we're going to become a big part of the space conversation. And if you participate with us, you'll be a part of that conversation as well. Not knowing your business, your plans, your goals, I can't be really specific, but we expect the whole industry to be interested in what we're doing.
Yeah, and if you've got a business going that is not on the plan, we'd certainly be interested in knowing about it. We have to know more about what he's doing before we can really talk much to him, I guess.
The other day, I guess it was Friday, when I was talking to Deborah Factor Lepore, and somebody asked her a question about her kid wanting to study engineering, but looking a lot more favorable at going to work for an Apple computer type of organization rather than a space organization because the projects have a lot faster turnaround and they don't usually get canceled by the government, which is the history of government space programs. Somebody else wrote in and talked about how space opens up engineering opportunities for businesses that one wouldn't even associate themselves with business with space, and use the example of Uber, since it's all based on GPS. Mm-hmm. And so would something like an Uber type of business using space technology, but really not having anything to do with space per se, it's shaking the hell out of the taxi cab industry in the cities where it's located, does that somehow get reflected on your plan?
Well, the GPS constellations, I think, are shown a little bit toward the top of the plan because they already exist.
Right.
I don't see an obvious connection between the plan and Uber other than the GPS system, which has been around for a couple decades now.
Well, I think a disruptive technology is like that he's talking about is like 3D printing, which is something that is now happening in many different industries, and that's going to shake up everything that's happening in space right now. We're seeing people able to download entire little CubeSats, the software to build them on their 3D printers
on
and
their
launch them.
On their desktop, little 3D printer desktops.
Yeah, this is revolutionary. And if you, it's now 2 years ago, I was at the in Silicon Valley at one of the Space Frontier Foundation meetings, and I was just amazed. I grew up in Silicon Valley, right? I'm from Sunnyvale, California, and I was amazed at all the young kids, energized, enthused, going to Stanford and San Jose State, and from the local colleges there, going to the space conference, into coming up with all these wonderful concepts, starting their own companies. They were there, and then there were some capital, venture capitalists there. It was exciting. And now I come to find out that these things, these incubators are happening all over the country. And I just discovered a big one here in Austin, Texas, in the last couple of days. That they're happening all over. So there's a lot of exciting things happening in space right now. And the trick is you want to do it on the private side. You don't want to get involved with a big company that's got a big contract that's going to get canceled. I mean, that's the kind of the old space, okay?
Right.
But what we're seeing now is the birth of a whole new way of doing space. Look at the guys like Elon Musk and Bigelow and Paul Allen. These guys got their own new private companies that are happening. That aren't dependent on government contracts. They're commercially driven, and that's the future. That's the way we're going to make space happen. That's the way the integrated space plan is going to develop. It's not going to be all. There's government's going to play a role. Don't get me wrong, because they've got there's some things that they're going to we want them to pay for. But most of the niches that are going to be filled by private folks, I believe.
So let me try the question a different way, because you cited an example of 3D printing and I cited Uber, but they're both very disruptive, and space plays a huge role in their capability of being disruptive. So does the integrated space plan somehow accommodate disruptive technologies that impact terrestrial businesses rather than just space businesses per se?
Well, sure. I mean, one thing we already talked about was space solar power. I mean, that's going to be very disruptive. There's different things on the plan that are going to disrupt terrestrial industries, but in the main, for the better. Things that are cleaner, more efficient, more IT-centric, more AI, the things that are needed to make
asteroid mining
will make things more efficient here on Earth.
Yeah. And so we've tried to incorporate those things where we see them on the plan. And it's hard to see all of the many areas that they're going to affect over time. We've tried to focus primarily in the area of space and space development and our near, how it's going to affect just things in the near term over the next 20 years, primarily where we're going to go out and build habitats and on the moon and Mars and in space. There's obviously a lot that, as we study it more, they'll be on future generations of the plan.
How often do you plan to evolve the integrated space plan, or is it constantly in a flux of evolution?
Well, I guess there's two metrics for that, and Ron may have some comments in a moment, but we have the hard copy poster that sort of by definition is a longer duration product. You know, we don't want to go to press physically constantly with different posters.
Right.
The physical poster, I think we need to see some fundamental changes in the space environment to justify making a new poster. So what would be an example of something like that? To use SpaceX as an example, if the Falcon Heavy flies and does well, if the Falcon 9 shows reusability, that is somewhat transformative to the whole future. So that would probably justify making a new hard copy plan.
But that's on there, Jay, already. We've got reusable.
Well, yeah, they're on there, but they haven't happened.
Well, I wouldn't make a plan for that. But anyway, go on.
So what I'm saying really, though, that's just an example. There needs to be some event that happens that changes the picture a little bit to justify making a new hard copy. The one on the web, we anticipate changing more often because it doesn't involve going to press and printing out, 1,000 or 2,000 copies of the poster. So we would anticipate the frequency of changing it online to be much more often than changing the physical poster. That's not really been determined, but once we get organized, I would think maybe like a quarterly kind of a frequency might make sense.
I've been waiting for... we've incorporated much of NASA's past design reference missions onto the plan. I've been waiting with bated breath for their latest design reference mission, where they say they're going to be incorporating all this ISRU and they're looking at cyclers and all these. There's an element anyway that I've talked to in NASA that claims that they're going to be. I don't want to say revolutionize, looking at a revolutionized approach, but something more consistent with what we in the outside the NASA community are talking about. So yeah, I really want to make sure this year that assuming those kind of government plans are made available, which they should be since they're supposedly developing them with our taxpayer dollars, we'll want to make sure those elements are incorporated. And for our purposes, we want to relook at all the cislunar infrastructure, just because those elements that are going to be needed to open up the moon, maybe the Lagrange point, and the moon, and then the next steps onto Mars, there's going to be a number of opportunities for the private sector to get involved and help assist there. We want to make sure we capture as many of those as we can possibly think of, and I think we've done a pretty good job at this cut, but that may evolve over the next year or two. So I can see paper copies evolving, but the copy on the web, if we were to, suddenly have an infusion of money and where we might relook at some things in greater detail, I can foresee maybe the online version kind of expanding horizontally, as a, and maybe a little bit vertically, but we may want to do some
more definition of the elements, break them down a little cleaner than what we're currently depicting for the visual, you know, poster. So it's going to change a little, in the not too distant future.
You have another caller on hold. Good afternoon, caller. Who are you? Welcome to the program.
Hey, David. This is Gerald Riggers.
Hi, Gerald. How you doing?
Hey, Gerald. How are you? Hey, Jay. Ron, how y'all?
Hey, good to hear from you.
Yeah. Hey, I really enjoyed the program. Over the years, starting with the Air Force and then NASA and then the Army later on, I ran quite a few studies on doing something similar, not nearly as grand, but, you know, projecting future things over 20 or 30 years. And in every case, we always had to come up with scenarios of the world economic situation, the world in terms of military conflict, and, you know, just a whole variety of things. And then put things into that kind of context. And then we'd always wind up with a number of different future possibilities. And then it was kind of a matter of doing some kind of a get together or brainstorming or whatever on, you know, assigning probabilities, getting different kind of experts around the country to get their input and all that sort of thing. And I was wondering what you did in that context, and then would you foresee, if you see that something is dramatically changing, whether it might have something to do with a lot of climate problems, or if they really crop up, or perhaps, you know, a really widespread economic collapse, hostilities, that kind of thing. What would it take to change it, or do you think it'd be worth changing it in a situation like that?
Well, I guess I think that it would depend on the scale of the events that were going on. If there was a tremendous economic meltdown, you know, that would probably slow things down. If there was some shortage of fossil fuels that became truly apparent, you know, that would probably accelerate space-based solar power. So certainly we'll adjust as time goes on. We intend to offer the world the integrated space plan forever. So it will morph and change over the decades with how circumstances change.
Yeah, and I just think looking back at the history of the plan back when I came out with the 1990s type version, I thought I had a pretty clear vision in the advanced projects group at Rockwell of what was going to happen over the next 20 or 30 years. But I totally missed being on Mars. You know, I thought back in 1990 that the 2016 planetary alignment would probably be the best opportunity, you know, to go to, you know, for the Mars One mission, you know, to Phobos. It didn't quite happen that way. Of course, in retrospect, at the time we didn't see so much. We didn't see the huge cost of shuttle operations, and we didn't see the early termination of the shuttle. You know, we didn't see that the government was going to get so risk averse. You know, we didn't see the institutional opposition to reusable systems coming from the industry and NASA. You know, there were so many things happening that happened over the last 20 years that we just couldn't have predicted. Consolidation in the aerospace industry and how that just cut off competition, which had a drastic effect on launch vehicle development. Couldn't foresee that. Couldn't foresee NASA wasn't ever going to develop the propulsion beyond an SSME. So, yeah, in the next 20 years, yeah, economic collapse could very well happen. We could almost see that coming right now. So, yeah, things are going to change.
what the ISP tries to do is lay things out in a logical way, lay the requirements out in a logical way that things have to happen whenever they get happen, whenever they get funded to happen, so hopefully, you know, in an ideal world, we just slide the timetable as opposed to move the elements around. But yeah, things, there's a lot that we're not psychic, so.
Right.
Speak for yourself, Gerald.
There was one thing I was happy to see on there, Jay, is that your timeline is very close to the one in my books.
I've read many of your books, Gerald, so maybe that's not a coincidence.
That could be. Well, I appreciate that. That's always a tricky supposition. How would you sum up kind of the influence or assumptions and in terms of world order and economics and that sort of thing that went into what you've created now?
I guess that we sort of took as a baseline the way things have been in recent years. And one tricky aspect of the integrated space plan is the pace of the plan. And some of the questions we've had today have sort of related to that. And the plan that we have shows a somewhat faster pace than things have been going recently, but a much slower pace than things could go if a real high priority was placed on space development. So there's sort of a, I don't know, like a dimmer switch. There's a range of pace that's available. I think everybody listening to this space show would like a faster pace. But there's definitely a lot of room for variance in the speed of development in the investment that's being made, depending on what's happening in the world.
Would you characterize it kind of as a linear extrapolation as it's laid out now, as opposed to, it's obviously not exponential, because then it you know, you would see the accelerating pace of things, but yet it's not negatively multivariant. Or, you know, you'd start just kind of stretching out and stretching out. So I guess I answered my own question there, that it probably looks pretty linear.
I think you're seeing an increasing amount of investment as you move into the future, because there's more things going on. So, for example, now we have the space station, but if you look into the future, there'll be the space station and a lunar base and a base on Mars and. So more funds are going to be flowing into space, but that's only appropriate. Space is already a $300 billion a year industry.
Yeah.
More investment is merited by what's going on now, and a quick glance at the Integrated Space Plan shows that in the near future, a whole lot more is going to be going on. So more investment should come.
And it's clear, I think, I won't speak for you, but hopefully that investment you're speaking about is not strictly government investment, you know, that the burden on that is actually being shifted to the private sector to a large extent.
Well, I think that's how it should be.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we have sort of in the back office of the Integrated Space Plan is to denote which pieces of the plan need government funding. In my personal opinion, I'm not speaking for a whole team right now, but most of the things, in my view, should be self-supporting. They should be a business unit that makes sense.
Yeah.
So what's an example? Something like the James Webb Space Telescope. I don't see a business case for any private industry to build something like that for a profit. I just don't see a mechanism for that working out. So something like that would seem to me to have to require either all government funding or the lion's share government funding. But I'm looking at the plan right now, and most of these blocks should be self-sustaining. And that's good, because that means the money is in the main not coming from the government till. And it's also good because the clock speed of private industry is a lot faster. If you compare SpaceX to the pace of the government, it's beyond night and day.
Right, yeah.
So I would rather have most of the things be private industry. And that's one of the future steps of the Integrated Space Plan, is to show how the blocks interact with each other? Which blocks are customers of which other blocks? Who is making is block one making sales to blocks 3 and 5? Those relationships are part of what we're working on for the future integrated space plan.
Yeah, if you discussed this earlier and I missed it, I apologize. But what is how are you going to finance the continued work on it? All the plans I did for the government never went anywhere because they never had any follow-up funding for them, you know?
Well, this is a great question and a constant challenge. You know, I listened to the space show about people talking about the government panel that they worked on, and they got $3 million to do their task, and I can't even imagine having $3 million to do what we're trying to do. Our immediate funds are very small. It's based on sales of our poster and any contributions that companies want to make, that kind of thing. We got our start from a Kickstarter campaign. I'm sure we'll be doing more of those campaigns. And I expect in the near future, you know, we'll get some support from NASA for what we're doing because it's obviously in their benefit for us to succeed.
Okay. Well, I wish you the best of luck with it. And it's a hell of a piece of work, so congratulations on it.
Thanks a lot, Gerald. That means a lot to hear you say that.
Thank you, Gerald. Gerald, thank you for your call. Good to hear from you again.
Yes, sir. You too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Listeners, there is still time if you want to call in. What is our number? 1-866-687-7223. And email is drspace@thespaceshow.com. Brenda maybe is going to be our last emailer for the day. We'll see. Because we are at the end of the scheduled part of the show today. Brenda's in San Diego. And Brenda says, many themes and commercials for many different products, plus for those who went to business school or maybe any kind of school, have always been taught or heard or learned by the School of Hard Knocks that timing means everything. So, Ron, when you were working on this plan decades ago, it doesn't appear that the timing regarding the development of the space industry, the commercial space industry, the investment in the industry, technology, all of that was even close to being ready for something like the Integrated Space Plan. But if you fast forward to 2015, 2016, with all that's going on in investment, the opportunities emerging with very little resistance needed in terms of management and money, like the CubeSat industry, the do-it-yourself industry, 3D printing, and other things, that the timing is either here or almost here. Do you subscribe to the theory that the timing makes all the difference in the world and you've been able to hang on long enough to where the timing is now in your favor?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth there. Yeah, another thing I didn't see way back in the day was the growth of all these billionaire types that would, you know, of the people that would become mega wealthy and then decide to have their own space program. Boy, certainly didn't see that in 1990. And when you mix all those kind of elements together, you know, and then those guys that want to have their own space program are now kind of solving the problems that arose in the 90s when we did all the industry consolidation and didn't have any competition between the aerospace contractors. Well, now they got competition, you know. Now they're forced to change.
Yeah, they're being disrupted.
They're being disrupted. And that's a wonderful thing from our aerospace, you know, space
absolutely
perspective.
Absolutely, totally concur.
So yeah, and it's happening at a time when some marvelous things have happened. We've now got a space station. We've now got a private firm that's you know, NanoRacks, that's doing some wonderful things, making space available to folks. You know. If you're a student and want to fly to the space station, it's really a pretty easy thing to do. And the whole growth of the whole CubeSat industry, they're doing some fantastic things. So yeah, you know, one of the things I've learned is that if you've got a vision, you want to see it come to fruition, you have to hang in there long enough. You have to persevere to see it happen.
Have to have staying power. You have to have some staying power.
Yeah. You do.
You guys got another caller. Good afternoon, caller. Who are you? Where are you? Welcome to our show today.
Oh, this is John of Fort Worth.
Howdy, John.
I all this discussion of the commercial aspect, the thing that I keep getting at is, where is the business? That is to say, private industry will do and provide services if there's a customer to pay for those services. And I'm wondering is when we talk about anything beyond low Earth orbit, or maybe geosynchronous, let's be more accurate there, where is really the customer that would actually pay for all these commercial industries to develop to really be able to implement something on a scale of what you're talking about?
Well, John, I think that the blocks that you see on the integrated space plan, many of them are customers.
Mm-hmm.
That if there's going to be a commercial lunar base in the future, the customers are going to be research scientists, people that are buying ice and processed into propellants. There's going to be an economy between the different blocks depicted on the integrated space plan. And that's part of our future development, is to show those linkages, which blocks are our customers or suppliers of other blocks, to sort of show that how that's going to unfold in the future. Also, I'd like to see, and this is a longer-term thing, I'd like to see us develop, like, mini business plans for the different blocks.
Well, I mean, it seems like in scientists and things of that sort, you're still basically talking about the government is still kind of the customer in those kind of areas a lot. It has to be some kind of funding, or at least maybe a government-private partnership of some sort. But the scale of money you need is still fairly large to get it to happen, it seems like.
Well, certainly an area that's key to this whole thing is cost to orbit. And one of the key ways that we're trying to drive down that cost to orbit to enable more activity in low Earth orbit is the birth of tourism. One thing we do have lots of is people, and those are payloads. And that's what people like Virgin Galactic are taking advantage of, and folks that, everybody, you know, a lot of companies that want to fly tourists to space, and there are hundreds and hundreds of people that have put down lots of money to fly. When we get the vehicles mature enough, and in the next year or two, we're going to see those. This has been ongoing now for the last 5 or 8 years, so those vehicles are now about ready to fly, and we're going to see a burst of commercial tourism activity in at first suborbital, and then once things like Paul Allen's big wing start flying, just an airplane, but he can put a little rocket under there that can go to orbit, then we're going to see orbital. We can already fly tourists to orbit on the ISS. We got Bigelow we're about to see his inflatable on the ISS, and he's already got two inflatables up there right now, and we're about to see his next generation to handle tourists. Once the capability comes along to send tourists to a little bit cheaper to orbit, so it's definitely a stepping stone type of a thing, and this has been a long time coming, but now there's light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's all about markets and development of markets, and it's the markets and the technological capability have to come together, and we're seeing it come together now. So that's what gives us reason to be optimistic. But, you know, once again, some big giant thing could happen, like a total collapse of the economy, and things might get set back further.
That wouldn't be helpful.
It wouldn't be helpful. But there's a lot of very positive things happening right now.
Well, just in the reusable launch vehicle segment, between fully, partially reusable vehicles from Ariane, Vulcan, the SpaceX activities, Blue Origin, it seems that we've really sparked a reusable revolution that can't help but drive down the cost of access to space.
Well, and Elon Musk has even forced Boeing and Lockheed Martin to develop reusable first stages that are in work right now. So even though we've been talking about these things for 15, 20 years, it's taken that long for new people to enter the market, like in the launch vehicle market, to force the change, and we're seeing it happen right now.
Well, that's certainly optimistic then. Well, I hope that all continues, because that's I definitely agree. Reusability is a key thing in the Earth to orbit part of it. Without that, I think we're really going to have some problems.
And you're right.
Our plan envisions significantly more reusable in the Earth orbit space, and we also have, and I don't know, John, if you've had a chance to actually look at the plan, but we have an in-space transportation architecture that's depicted that basically has all reusable elements. So we have something that's somewhat similar to what Lockheed Martin has advocated with the Jupiter and the Exoliner, similar capabilities to that deployed in various parts of, for example, low in LEO, at L1 and other places, to where not only will there be reusable transportation from Earth to orbit, but also reusable in-space transportation.
We just got to figure out who's going to build those things.
Yeah. Well, that's certainly, yeah. Well, that's all very, very positive then. I wasn't trying to leave out the idea of reusability beyond Earth orbit either, but I'm just saying that whole area of, if we need to get that back on track again. The end of the shuttle and how that all panned out, kind of left everybody overreacting away from it for a while, and we need to get back to reusability, I think.
Well, Elon Musk is forcing the cost down enough, fairly, significant amount. I mean, he's looking at 60% reductions in traditional chemical propulsion launch costs. That's pretty amazing. And that's enough to trigger a lot of this activity. But hopefully over time we're going to get beyond chemical propulsion to get to low Earth orbit. That's one of those kind of disruptive breakthroughs that could happen on a couple of different fronts. But when that happens, all hell breaks loose. Right now we're kind of struggling with traditional rockets, but if we can get them cheap enough, we can still make a lot happen.
If we develop anti-gravity or something.
Anti-matter propulsion. There you go.
Lovely.
Anything else, John?
I think that'd be it. I think it's a good idea. I'm very positive about what you're doing there with this plan. Just want to say that as I leave.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Very much, John.
Okay. Bye.
Let's see. Gents, we're coming up on a two-hour show. Why don't you each take a few minutes and summarize what we've been talking about and tell us what you'd like us to hold on to or remember. What do you think the key points are?
Well, Ron, you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. I guess we're trying to do this to help facilitate future activity primarily. So we really want folks to look at the plan and there'll be more articles, and we'll be going out to conferences and talking to folks and looking for ways to get some private sector interest in some of the parts of the plan that NASA isn't really looking at right now, but would help NASA in the long run. So that's the kind of things we're going to be focusing on: development of the database that anybody can go to and get information on these elements. We didn't really mention yet, but already our website is now in the top 1% in the world. I think people are going to it for information, and we hope it's going to be a lot better a year from now. And we're going to be looking for folks to help us get us there, there too. So if anybody out there wants to help, please use Jay's email to to get in touch with us, and we look forward to working with a lot of folks out there in the future.
And listeners, you can go to their website, thespaceplan.com, and you can find their contact information and bios there as well. So they're very easy gentlemen to get a hold of, and of course you can always reach them through the Space Show. Jay, your comments, your closing comments, or
that's my,
takeaways?
My first comment is Ron's email is also on our website. Everybody that's listening to the show knows that. We invite you all to participate with us in trying to continue to develop a long-term plan for humanity's future in space. There's room for everybody to take part. We invite you to come to our website, thespaceplan.com, and look around. See if you like what we're doing. If you have suggestions, let us know. If you want to volunteer, let us know. If you want to buy one of our posters, go ahead. If you want to put in your Facebook page that, hey, I just found thespaceplan.com, go check it out. Ron is absolutely correct. Our website is doing quite well. We're getting a lot of traffic for a new website already. We've got a long way to go because we have a pretty sizable community that's focused on space activity. And we want to get our message out to everybody and let everybody participate with us to try to build the best plan that we can to show to everyone and get more excitement and engagement about what our future in space can be. So in closing, one thing I forgot. All this met through the National Space Society. All the participants in our group, the Space Finance Group, Integrated Space Analytics, we all met through the National Space Society. And I just want to throw that out there as a tip of the hat to them. And come visit us at thespaceplan.com.
And I will say that you guys are a new sponsor from our Indiegogo plan. I'm looking forward to your frequent messages and working with you during the coming year as well, and appreciate your sponsorship of the Space Show and your help. It's very important to us. And listeners, I have their plan. I have the roll-up version of it, and it's great. There's a lot of places you can put it. You don't need to go frame it and have a magnificent wall, like you would, be displaying your art or something like that. But I have it on the door to the closet in my office where all my office supplies are. And I, every time I look over to my left, I see it because the part of the sliding door that faces outward is where I put it, and it's there no matter what position that door is in. I see it every day when I'm doing the show and when I'm looking at it. So there's a lot of places to play it, to display it, to keep it on your mind and let you know that there's a lot of possibilities and a lot of pathways out there to accomplish things that we talk about here on the Space Show and you talk about in your own space advocacy. So check it out. Check out the articles that have been written about it that I will put in the summary of the review when I archive the show. And pay attention to it over the coming months. I think you'll hear a lot more than what you've heard over the past several years because the timing is right, and these guys are capitalizing on that in a big way, as rightly they should be. So, gentlemen, I want to thank you for being with us on the Space Show today. Very interesting program, and I look forward to talking to you more about the Integrated Space Plan in the months and years to come. I'm sure we'll do more programming about it.
Thanks a lot, David.
Thank you, David.
Both of you, thank you, and have a great weekend. And guys, keep it safe for the rest of the weekend. Have a great week coming up. And as I say, I tell you always to look up, but also look on the wall where you're going to put your integrated space plan. And, if you want to put it on the ceiling and I tell you to look up, hey, that's even more important. Write me a note and tell me that's where you put it. Thank you all for listening today, and thanks to Jay and Ron for being great guests and telling us about something new and innovative on the Space Show. Again, everybody have a great week. Goodbye from the Space Show.